listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll take a look at a new mandate from the Trump administration that rolls back coverage requirements for birth control. First, it's time for our weekly review of state news with a big Wisconsin redistricting case in the U.S. Supreme Court and a change of plans on I-94. Patrick Marley is a state government reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. Patrick, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Rob.
Well, you were at the U.S. Supreme Court covering this hearing, the oral arguments on a challenge to Wisconsin's election map. Remind us, what are plaintiffs arguing when it comes to redistricting here in Wisconsin?
So the Republican legislators had both houses of the when they drew these maps. They drew them to their favor, and so a group of Democratic voters said that they believed their constitutional rights were violated by those maps. A lower court agreed with them. Now the U.S. Supreme Court is reviewing whether the Republicans went too far in taking partisanship into account in drawing those maps.
And what's the state's argument then in response?
The state's argument is that this is the sole province of the legislature. They can draw the maps as they see fit. And also they contend that the state has a natural benefit to Republicans because Democrats tend to live in places like Madison and Milwaukee and have packed themselves into a small geographical area that gives a natural upside to Republicans when drawing statewide maps.
So the big thing on a Supreme Court case is listening to what the justices are saying and asking and trying to divine where they're going to go with this. What kind of things did you see from the justices in this case?
It seems pretty clear to me that we're going to get a 5-4 decision out of this case. The question is it going to be 5-4 for the state or is it going to be 5-4 for the Democratic voters? The swing vote there is Anthony Kennedy. That is one of the few points that all sides will agree on, is that he is the person who will determine the outcome of this case.
So the liberal justices, as they're usually described, the four of them, were sympathetic with the challenge to the map, and the conservative justices were not.
That's right. The conservative justices would, Samuel Alito said, this kind of move may be distasteful, but the courts can't really have a reliable standard for figuring out when things go too far. The courts have ruled in the past that politicians are allowed to consider partisanship and draw things to their advantage to some extent. They've also ruled that it can go too far and reaches a point at which it's done so extremely that it violates the Constitution. What the court has been divided with for decades is there a line you can draw that courts can manage in an easy way? And they have split on that. Anthony Kennedy has said, I do believe that we have not yet found a measurement to do it, but that there may be a measurement out there that courts could use to figure this out. And so this case proposes a new test. And the plaintiffs are hoping that Anthony Kennedy will agree with them that that's the way to figure out when things have gone too far.
And it seems like, in a way, this whole court case, as it's gone through the system, is basically targeted at one person, Justice Anthony Kennedy, and he's the one who's going to decide this.
That's right. I mean, everybody's pitching their arguments to him the other day. The briefs were written citing him as often as possible because they know he is the crucial vote here.
And did he do anything that might give any kind of tea leaf readers a glimmer into what he's thinking?
So I think anybody would caution you not to read too much into what they do on the bench, that sometimes somebody can give a hard time of one side and then end up being on their side in the end. But many took note of the fact that Anthony Kennedy had tough questions for the state and the legislators who drew these maps, but did not ask a single question of the attorney for the Democratic voters who are challenging the map.
We're talking to Patrick Marley from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel, looking at some of the top news around Wisconsin this week. Want to move on? We'll be watching for that result from the Supreme Court. It'll be coming down. It'll take a while, I think. But I want to get a little closer to home now. A big change in plans for a stretch of I-94 in Milwaukee. State Transportation Secretary David Ross wrote to the feds, asking them to call off their authorization of a big expansion project. What would this project, Patrick, have done?
This is the stretch of road between the Zoo Interchange and the Marquette Interchange in Milwaukee. They're the two busiest interchanges on the state's freeway system. The state has long planned to build out that road. It's very old, and people describe it as a bit of a choke point. As the zoo interchange project gets near completion, you'll have four lanes of travel in each direction there, four lanes of travel in each direction at the Marquette interchange, and then it goes down to three lanes through this, what they call I-94 East-West. It's going to be a project that would cost almost $1 billion, probably more by the time the state would get around doing it. And what we learned was that the federal government had written a letter to the state, which has had trouble funding all its projects, saying that the state needed to come up with a funding plan by the end of September, or that it would revoke its authorization for it. Secretary Dave Ross's response to that was to write a letter of his own back to the Fed saying, we don't want the federal approval anymore. Please revoke that.
So this is a casualty in a way of the budget process and that long debate over transportation funding. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. The budget was delayed by almost 3 months, largely because lawmakers couldn't agree on what the appropriate funding levels were for transportation. They reached a compromise in which they didn't raise taxes, and they limited their borrowing. And, yeah, this is a direct outcome of that, with less money available for roads, we're going to see projects that are not just delayed, but delayed to such an extent that they're effectively abandoned.
Now, this stretch of highway you've written was not universally approved by people in the Milwaukee area. What kind of opposition did we see to it?
Yeah, the neighborhood there did not want this project to happen, was worried about the expansion. It goes through a historic neighborhood, Story Hill. It comes very close to two cemeteries. There was a lot of concern about that from the community. So this transportation funding issue has been an internal Republican fight, but the biggest victors here are the people in that neighborhood, the Democratic elected officials from Milwaukee, and Democrats and environmentalists generally who were opposed to that particular project.
So local Democratic officials were opposed to this?
Yes, many of them were.
And I want to, this bleeds into another news story a little bit. The Foxconn plant, there was talk about what kind of road changes, what kind of transportation funding would go into feeding into this proposed Foxconn plant. Is there spillover from this story into that one?
Well, maybe a little bit. I mean, one issue was that, I-94 south of Milwaukee, sort of through Racine County, has been a long neglected project. There was a debate over whether to do that or the zoo interchange first. The Doyle and Walker administrations disagreed on that, and the north-south leg of I-94 has been pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Now with Foxconn coming, that project suddenly moved up to the front burner and was one of the few projects that got a big infusion of cash through the state budget, actually through the separate incentive package that was given to Foxconn. So that is now moved up in its priority, and you know, we should see a lot happening there in Racine County because of Foxconn.
And one more story I wanted to look at. Assembly Representative Bob Gannon, Republican from West Bend, passed away this week. Emergency responders had found him in his car. Initial reports say he died there of natural causes. How are fellow lawmakers and others in state government remembering him?
Well, he was not in the legislature for a long time, but he made a big impression here. He was a very conservative member of the legislature with very strong opinions and someone who was not afraid to state them. So he was cheered by his conservative colleagues as someone who was a principled voice, who was out there making his points very strongly. Democrats were sometimes a little frustrated by him. There were some pretty feisty speeches on the floor of the assembly at times over crime in Milwaukee, over racial justice issues that bothered the Democrats at times.
Now, I know he just passed, and maybe it's too soon to talk about the politics here, but what happens now to his seat?
So we would presume that the governor will call a special election for that. Those are usually held with, he hasn't done that yet. Those are held in fairly short order. It's a very Republican seat, so it'll be a Republican who almost surely wins. But, there could be a primary with several people in it, and the primary would likely determine the final occupant of that seat.
And does the redistricting lawsuit we started off talking about play into this at all?
It appears not. The maps for that district and all, and the entire statewide map has been deemed unconstitutional by a lower court, but the Supreme Court has set that aside as it considers considers the case. The experts I've talked to from both sides seem to think that a special election could be held and that that seat can be filled.
Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
That was Patrick Marley, state government reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel.